Learning Machine delivers a powerful system for issuing academic records like certificates, transcripts, and diplomas using the blockchain as a secure anchor of trust. These records can be shared with employers or anyone else who needs to verify them instantly and free anywhere in the world. And as students and alumni share their records, real-time analytics provide an insight on how these are being used. Learning Machine is trusted by education ministries, universities, and K-12 providers around the world for blockchain-based academic records. To find out how you can move your credentialing infrastructure into the 21st century, send us a note at learningmachine.com.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the EdTech Podcast, the show about improving the dialogue between ed and tech for better innovation and impact. This week's episode is all about digital transformation in higher education, and we range from Anglo Ruskin University in the UK to the University of Bahrain. First up, as part of our new mini-series feature with Canvas by Instructure, I shared a conversation with Professor Ian Martin, Vice-Chancellor of Anglo Ruskin University. Professor Martin grew up in Hampshire before taking up a place at the University of Leeds to study medicine in the UK. He has since had a number of university roles both within the UK and across several Australian universities before kicking off his VC role at Anglo Ruskin in March 2016, where he pledged to make digital transformation a must-do initiative within the university strategy. Here's our chat together. Hello.
Sophie, Ian Martin.
Hi Ian, how are you?
Good, thanks. If we're focusing on digital transformation here, it's about how can we systematically make the most of digital solutions that really add value for our students, our staff, and those who work with the university outside, not only to make it a better, more flexible, adaptable experience, but also to enable us to become more efficient as an organisation.
Talked previously about universities needing to be entrepreneurial and providing value for future generations. I wondered, you know, with that viewpoint, what do you see students demanding from higher education increasingly?
If we look at what students want, I think that the value for money phrase has been done to death in the United Kingdom over the last year. But I think it does encapsulate some things that students want an experience that matches their expectations. And if we look at the digital piece, it's not that they want something that is completely different to that which they experience in their everyday lives, but they see many parts of their lives that have really good digital experiences, and they think that could add value to my education, and they want to see that as part of their education. So some of that is around delivering the education, and some of it is around delivering the services we offer. Looking at the latter piece, students will say, well, I can log on to my bank at 3 a.m. and do 90% of the transactions I need to do. I can book an airline flight, a hotel, whatever it is. I want that kind of level of experience from services at the university. And when we look at our students, they want an educational experience that is flexible and suits their increasingly complex lives. Many of our students have part-time jobs, caring responsibilities. They're coming back in for a new educational experience after some time in the workforce. They want to be able to benefit from the campus when they come to the campus, but really benefit from good quality digitally delivered educational materials at other times. So they get that really good blend.
And so are you in the middle of a sort of digital transformation project at the moment, or what's the kind of state of play at Anglo Ruskin?
So I've been in my current role about 2 years here, and ensuring that we embedded digital transformation, digital solutions in what we do within our strategy was something that I came in saying we must do. This isn't an optional extra for us. This is a must. So we've got an underpinning digital strategy that we will be working through a number of initiatives over the next 3 years. It's never going to stop. It's a continual roll on, roll off of new projects. So yes, we are in the middle of it, but I would probably challenge our organization and say we'd probably never not be in the middle of it, because we're constantly looking for new things.
So you mentioned sort of, you know, what students increasingly want. Are you seeing that shape the edtech sector in terms of what they deliver?
Undoubtedly. I mean, if you look at sort of learning management systems, virtual learning environments, whatever you want to call them, depending whether you're on one side of the Atlantic or the other, they've undoubtedly recognized that high quality delivery of media rich materials is important. Absolute flexibility across variable devices, be it phones, iPads, Chromebooks, computers, desktops, is mandatory. I think the last time we looked, I think our students are coming in with an average of 3 devices per student that they log on with. They want to have that experience, and we're seeing people deliver solutions that recognize that. Being much more platform agnostic, so you're not locked into a particular ecosystem, so the students don't feel disadvantaged if they're coming with a particular ecosystem of devices compared to another one. So we're really seeing that recognition. And I think with some of the service delivery solutions in EdTech, again, I think we are seeing that. I think the other piece that we're beginning to see, and I think we're really on the early part of the journey, is how we make the best use of data and information to help students craft their own way through learning materials and their time at university. And I suspect that we will see a lot more of that smart use of data, AI helping us. I mean, we're not at the point of the Amazon equivalent where 8 out of 10 people who bought book X found book Y great. You could say the same for education. We're not quite there yet, but I think we really are beginning to see that. And I see the data piece as one where we are going to see ongoing transformation over the next few years.
I always ask all of our guests if they have any books, people or places to go that inspire them and they go back to. So that doesn't have to necessarily be around digital transformation, but could perhaps shape how you go about your leadership as well.
So I think in terms of the digital piece, the reference point for me is continuing to look outside education, because actually a lot of the great ideas come from somebody doing something different and you think you can apply it there. I think in terms of things I look to, certainly in shaping both our strategy and our digital transformation piece, the whole piece around design thinking, the work of Tim Brown and IDEO, I know it's been talked about a great deal, but I think there's a lot in it, and in particular, forcing you to think about what people need before you get to what technology can help deliver you what people need. And I think that very much the approach around people and problem-centered design is something we keep on coming back to all the time, and I certainly keep on coming back to. Like many people who enjoy this area, you tend to be a bit of a geek and you're always trying to pull yourself back from technology first to people first. And I think that whole design thinking piece, albeit with some caveats that you can't overstretch the ideas, is really important. Certainly something I've gone back to a lot over the last 3 or 4 years.
Thanks so much, Ian. And I look forward to sharing all the links and references among our show notes and social feeds. Our next guest in this week's episode is Cameron Mirza, Head of Transformation at the University of Bahrain. I met Cameron in the queue for food at the Global Education and Skills Forum in Dubai, and he was generous enough to lend me some time for an on-the-spot interview on digital transformation in higher education. We talk about everything from working in the Department for Education during Tony Blair's government, the role of EdTech and specifically online learning to support new learning opportunity in the Middle East, and where to pick up the best knowledge on Twitter. Listen in for all this good stuff and more, and wish me luck now as I head into Cornwall on a bank holiday weekend in a major scheduling oversight. Have a great week. So yeah, we've just had some fantastic food. I'm here with Cameron Mirza, who's head of strategy for the Office of the President at the University of Bahrain. So we've just had a really interesting, quite wide-ranging conversation about the state of educational technology and how effective it's been in the UK and in your country that you're currently in at the moment in Bahrain. But your background, so you're from South London.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I was born and brought up in Birmingham. Spent most of my career in London. I worked probably 6 or 7 years in central government before coming out to Bahrain in 2011.
Fantastic. And so what was your role within schools as well there?
So we were generally part of a unit which was around PPP, so it's policy and performance. So really we're just driving education policy, making it stick really. So, you know, I think policy in those days were, you know, we're good at making policy, but actually where we were quite weak was about implementation. So our job was to oversee implementation, particularly in local authorities, and, you know, try and do our best for young people in the school system.
Fantastic. So that was within the Department for Education under Tony Blair's government?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
very interesting. Well, I guess the first question might be then, how do you see edtech, educational change then and now in the UK?
So I think education has definitely evolved over the last decade. I think that certain challenges have made it evolve in many ways. So austerity has really, I think, bitten hard into the education system. But at the same time, I think that in itself is creating an environment for some innovation. So I think the academies program has been, I think, broadly, you know, you could argue it's been quite successful in terms of free schools as well, freedom of choice, allowing schools to have far more influence over their policy rather than being dictated to somewhat by local government and central government. So I think that was quite good in terms of helping areas to unleash some potential. I think that we're still a long way to go in terms of deployment of technology within schools, just broadly speaking. I think there is still a factor around cultural change is not really taken into account. I think technology has a lot of positives, and I think that certainly it will allow us to deploy education to a far broader number of students. We're able to quality control what goes out, and we're able to be a bit smarter in how we assess as well. Ultimately, what's the point of technology? Enhance the student experience and create more time for teachers to spend with students rather than doing mundane tasks. And I think we've probably still got a long way to go. Talking to teachers, they're still bogged down with paperwork, they're still bogged down with process. And I think really the old, you know, utopia is really allowing technology for students to learn in a smarter, better, faster way. To enhance their learning, I don't think you can change face-to-face. I think that's still the critical success factor of education. But it allows us to have a bit of flexibility around the edges in terms of allowing students to learn in their own time, anytime, any place, anywhere. I think it's really interesting. I think young people use their phones and their iPads, and it's allowing them to use that to enhance their education at home or wherever they want to be. So I think it's improved accessibility. I think we've got a bit of way to go in quality and content. And teachers have got to be, from my experience, they've got to be enabled to use technology in a far smarter way. I think at the moment it's still a bit clunky. There are real exciting pockets of good practice going on, but essentially I think that the whole system needs to invest in professional development of staff to understand how to use the benefits of technology. So teachers are just like students. They need to have their potential unleashed. So I think that's the bit where we're still, you know, a little bit behind the curve.
Very
so that was a very, very long answer to your question, Sophie.
Well, no, it's very interesting. Well, I guess I interviewed Coventry University recently.
Yeah,
They're doing a lot of online activity.
Yeah.
So to what extent is that happening at your university, University of Bahrain as well?
Yeah. So broadly in the Middle East, online learning is not recognised, which is, I think, a bit of a shame because, you know, young people can learn so much, and not just young people, but anyone can learn so much from online learning platforms, and a lot of the quality is far higher than you would get in a face-to-face setting. I think there's fundamentally a sense of distrust about online platforms at the moment, and I think that although the initial uptake of courses is very high, what I tend to notice is the drop-off rates are quite significant very quickly. So within a space of a few weeks, you know, uptake has diminished, people are falling off their courses. So, and I think a lot of that has to do with the resilience level of people in the region. I think so that we've got some work to do to build up that resilience, that level of resilience and that ability to concentrate for longer periods of time. And also they're used to very much didactic learning, face-to-face. Somebody's going to stand in front of me for an hour and I'm going to make notes. So I think it's a case of evolution rather than revolution. I think what the region's got to do is move to more kind of modern learning methods. You know, flipped classroom, for example, would be interesting. So more project-based learning or inquiry-based learning. And we can make that transition to more, you know, more of a balanced approach between face-to-face and online. But there's no doubt that online learning in this part of the world, and like many parts of the world, has got to become a more kind of, you know, a reality for young people. You've got Saudi Arabia now where women are going to be able to drive. It's going to revolutionise their economy. They want access to online learning platforms. Professional development of people within the workforce. So a big problem within the region is not just youth unemployment, but also underemployment. People in the workforce, how can we use online platforms to give them a better skill set? So I think that's the conversation we're having, really, in terms of using technology to uplift, you know, learning within the region, and also in terms of productivity. You know, a lot of the economic diversification in the region, particularly in Saudi, is driven through the private sector, and those people employed in the private sector will need opportunities to develop themselves professionally. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, huge potential. I look at the edtech sector in the region over the last 5 years, and it's absolutely, you know, risen exponentially with firms working in edtech. They see the potential. And I think within the next 18 months to 2 years, we'll see some of those come to fruition. And I think there'll be I think Saudi's a real area for, you know, an explosion in online learning platforms.
And are you seeing like a lot of sort of domestic edtech companies come up through in Bahrain, or is it international US or UK players? What's the kind of feel for that?
So it's a good question. So you see a lot of the big companies coming to the region now having a big presence. So quite an aggressive player at the moment is Amazon Web Services. You know, they're really pushing their AWS Educate program. Mm-hmm. So they're really trying to push young people into cloud and push universities into cloud as well, which makes sense. You know, it's far cheaper. You don't need the big servers like we needed in days gone by. But I think the problem is that we're looking at things from a truly global sense. And I think that for the region, like in, you know, context is important. So my view is that the bit which is missing is the, you know, the customization, and I call it glocal, right? So global through a local lens. And I think that's the way that we need to evolve edtech, particularly the lack of Arabic content is a huge opportunity. 1% of the internet is in Arabic content. And I think that absolutely, why should we force other languages onto young people? And, you know, Arabic is their mother tongue. We should encourage them to use it. And I think we need to be a bit better at creating content in Arabic.
Yeah, I have to connect you with this startup that I saw a pitch here, which is that was their absolute product development was around content for millennial learners in Arabic.
Huge opportunity.
Okay, and then, I mean, from a university point of view, one interesting thing we spoke about before we were recording was, you know, there is a sort of idea of the Middle East and edtech about being very well funded.
Yeah.
But you said that's not always the case.
Yeah, so I think there's a few there's a few myths about edtech in the region. I see more money being invested into edtech now, but I think it's still a bit of a slow burn. I think people are a little bit nervous or skeptical about the outcomes. I think also that regulatory frameworks need to recognise online learning, and I think that's probably the big kind of block right now, because still I think that there's in terms of getting your qualifications or certificates endorsed, I think in many countries are still not recognised. So I think we need to overcome that barrier. But I think once we do that, and I think there's a broader understanding within society around the benefits, I think that the benefits will be realised. You know, here at this conference, almost every other person I meet is an edtech, you know, affiliated to an edtech, or, you know, they've got an edtech startup. One of the biggest issues in the region right now is the lack of a skilled workforce. Mm-hmm. So look at the data, you know, Bayet.com, which is the equivalent to Monster.com in the region last year. End of last year, big survey came out. Approximately 70% of employers are saying there's a skills mismatch with graduates. Look at young people, and they're saying probably 60-70% of graduates are saying that the education system did not give them the skills required for employment and employment opportunities. So it's quite clear that there's a big mismatch. And absolutely, one of the ways that we can try to, you know, move towards a more kind of balanced education system is through technology. So I see it as a real opportunity over the next few years to really sort of to drive education technology in the region. And also it's about a broader base. One of the big drivers is lifelong learning. So you know, countries now looking at their workforce and saying the engine of growth is the private sector. How do we get more people into the private sector? We've got a lot of people who are not in the workforce. How do we get them engaged? How do we upskill them? Absolutely, EdTech is one of the key vehicles to do that.
Are you talking about the coding program at the university?
So coding is one of them, but I think it's also just in terms of professional development. You know, why is it that a young person can, you know, go to Silicon Valley, spend 6 months, you know, pay $50,000 to $100,000 and get a guaranteed job? Why is that the case? Why can they not do it here? Why mm-hmm. cannot we give them platforms that they can stay within the Arab world? So I think that one of the things we've done at the university is recognise the future of jobs. So industry 4.0 is going to be driven by technology. A key basis of that is coding and programming. So we've launched a programme with United Nations and Microsoft to develop 3,000 female programmers within the university. So it's very much about female empowerment as well as technology, bringing the two together. Of that 3,000, we expect 300 to become highly skilled programmers sought after by industry, and of that another 30 we'd like them to become startups, so work with accelerators to have their own technology startup. So 30 300 3000, you know, they're quite big targets, but at the same time I think that the current situation means that we have to be aggressive in our targets, and we have to fundamentally change how we approach some of these critical problems.
And how do you keep up to date with what's happening in education in the sector here? Which magazines do you read? Which media? Yeah. Which podcasts? Which books?
Well, luckily we've got podcasts like yours, Sophie, so that helps. You know, it's interesting because I get a lot of my information from social media. I use Twitter as a quite convenient way to access mm-hmm. what's going on. So I'll talk to colleagues in universities, whether that would be universities in the UK or universities in America, get a sense of what's happening. So, you know, I've got colleagues at MIT. MIT are now issuing certificates through blockchain.
I was going to say about that in terms of your other problem.
Yeah. So, you know, they're issuing certificates by blockchain. They're accepting cryptocurrencies for payments of courses. You know, and that is absolutely incredible. But we have to fit our solutions for the context. And we're nowhere near that right now. Although we're starting to do some interesting things. So we talked about the coding. We're starting to introduce things like IoT within the campus to become a smart campus. Even things like managing traffic flows in and out of the campus by using sensors, we're able to be far more efficient, far more effective, reduce our energy consumption. So we are in the top 400 universities in the world for being green. So, you know, in terms of carbon emissions, in terms of using solar power, a lot of that is driven by technology. So we are being quite progressive in that area. So, but it's, you know, Twitter for me is an incredible...
Who do you follow on Twitter?
Who do I follow?
Yeah. I mean, who are some of the accounts that you get a lot back from?
Yeah, so I think in terms of technology, there's EdSurge mm-hmm. is quite a good one. Harvard Business Review is quite good. A lot from universities like MIT, UC Berkeley are quite good. Imperial College, you know, some of the universities are doing some really good things around innovation, so it's following them as well. Who else? McKinsey, actually. I mean, I hate to plug consultants, but mm-hmm. what they're quite good at, you know, in terms of these big companies like PwC and McKinsey, are bringing lots of things together in one place. So rather than go through lots of accounts, you know, they bring it to you in one place in a nice package, so you're able to flick through and see what's going on. What is the future for education? So for me, it's about being modular. Instead of traditional degrees, it's about being bite-sized courses. It's about being omnichannel, face-to-face, online, anytime, any place, on your phone. And I think it's absolutely about lifelong. You know, it's about getting people, regardless of where they are in their life, back into learning through using technologies as a key platform to do that.
And what's your Twitter handle as well?
So, @CMirza1.
CMirza, M-I-R-Z-A, 1. Okay, got awesome. It. Well, thank you so much, Cameron. We're going to enjoy the band now.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We had some great shout-outs last week, including Ennis Dogan from the National Centre for Education Statistics at the Institute of Education Sciences within the US Department of Education, who said, "I love the show." And we're on to Themify about the broken category links on our website, which have come about because of a recent upgrade they've been going through. Also, hello to Anna Grzegorzek, who wrote in to say about coming to our festival in a few weeks. I am very excited. I've been listening to the EdTech podcast for a long time. Thanks, Anna. We can't wait to meet some of our listeners face-to-face as well. That's all for now. Don't forget to check out our show notes for partner discounts and other bits and bobs. We've just put up the transcript of our Blockchain in Education episode, which you might like to read through also. Otherwise, happy listening and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.